Evening, everybody. So last week, we discussed how long you have to wait from fleishiks to milchiks. So today we're going to begin with the question of milchiks to fleishiks. I mentioned before to you my predilection for leftovers. And so this comes up all the time with me because I come home and everybody's eating dairy. So I'll join them for the dairy. But of course, after dairy, you know, you can't really be full. So then you have to go ahead and eat something else. So you want to finish your supper with meat or something like that. So what do I need to do if I want to switch from dairy to meat? So the Gemara on Kuf Dalad says the following. Tana Igra Chamuad Rebbe Abba Of Ugvilna Nechalin B'Apikoren. You could eat chicken and cheese, derech hefker, hu tani la vuamer la, belo natil shidayim uvelo kinu achapeh. What does that mean? You could eat it derech hefker. It means that when you go from, you don't need to do natil shidayim in between, and you don't need to wash out your mouth. And then there's a story from Rav Yitzchak, and bottom line, the Gemara says like this, they brought him gvina and he ate it. Then they brought him basar, and he ate it, and he didn't wash his hands. So the Gemara said, how could you do that? It sounded like there's only a special leniency for chicken, because chicken isn't basar b'chalav deraisa. The Gemara says, oh, well, when is it that you have to wash your hands when you go from one to the other? That's when it's at night, and you can't see if your hands are dirty. But during the day, I could see that my hands are clean. And therefore, I don't need to wash them, even though I'm switching. So, there's a big machlokas we've shown him how to understand the bottom line halacha from this Gemara. Essentially, there are three views. Just like we had three views as to how long you have to wait from milchiks to fleishiks to milchiks, so too, there are going to be three views as to how long you have to wait from milchiks to fleishiks. One thing's for sure, that it's going to be more lenient. But depending on how you hold from fleishiks to milchiks, that will affect how you hold from milchiks to fleishiks. So Tosfos says that if you're going from fleishiks to milchiks, you have to wait till another meal, right? We had that last week. You finish the meal you're eating, and the next meal, even if it's a half hour later, you could have milchiks. So he says when you're going from milchiks to fleishiks, you don't need to wait to another meal. You could even do it during the same meal. What do you need to do? You just have to make sure that the tastes aren't going to mix. So you have to wash your hands, just in case there's any residue left on your hands, and you want to wash out your mouth. And there's two things that are needed to wash out your mouth. One is, take some water and swallow it, maybe. Move it around in your mouth a little bit, that will clean out your mouth. But the Gemara says, according to Tosfos, that just rinsing out your mouth with water, or with a liquid, might be insufficient. Why? Because sometimes you'll have some fatty residue on your mouth or things on your teeth or between your teeth or the like. You need to do something a little better than just a rinse. So what do you do for that? You eat something. You chew it. And assuming it's not one of these unusually sticky foods or the like, if you chew some food, let's say you take a piece of bread or you take some noodles or the like and you chew it, so the chewing of the food will do a much better job at cleaning out your mouth than simply rinsing your mouth with water. So therefore, what do you need to do for milchiks for fleishiks, according to Tosfos? Clean out your mouth, clean out your hands, and then you're done. And then, if you're going from, it's chicken and not meat, so then we're even more lenient. We don't end up accepting that. We are going to treat meat and chicken the same, even though the Gemara implies that they're different. We are machmir for chicken as well. It's not clear why we're equally machmir. Tosfos notes that this is already the minhag. The Gemara says you could be much more makel for chicken. Tosfos thinks maybe our Gemara is going like the opinion that chicken is derabanan and we paskin chicken is deraisa. But as we've mentioned before, we paskin chicken and milk is also derabanan. So why we're so machmir about chicken is not clear, but bottom line, that's the halacha. The halacha is we treat chicken and meat the same. So that's the view of Tosfos. If you want to go from milchiks to fleishiks, wash your hands, rinse out your mouth, clean your mouth out with some food as well, and that's good enough. Rabbeinu Tam, if you remember, said actually from meat to milk, all you have to do is clean out your mouth. So if milk to meat is more kal, what does that require? He thinks that all you need to do is wash your hands. You don't need anything else. But we don't accept that. And the third view is the Rambam. The Rambam says between basar, behema, and gvina, like we said, you need to wait 6 hours. When it comes to cheese to meat, you just need to do, like we said, wash out your mouth with... He actually doesn't think you need to both wash out your mouth with a liquid and a solid, but as we said, we paskin that you do. So halacha l'maisa, this is pretty straightforward. Halacha l'maisa, what do we say you need to do? Three things. Again, wash out your mouth with a liquid, like water or anything else. Wash out your mouth with a solid, like bread or noodles or the like. And finally, wash off your hands. Now, how long? We'll get to it. Okay. So, what about if you... how long do you have to do this for? In other words, let's say I had a cup of coffee with milk, and now I want to, a half hour later, want to eat a meat meal. Or I had something dairy, and a half hour later I want to eat some meat. Is there an expiration? I clearly, like many of us, ate dairy for lunch. We ate fleishig for supper. Nobody thought that they had to wash out their mouth and wash off their hands and the like. So how long does this wait? So obviously it's not going to be any more stringent than meat to milk. So certainly 6 hours will be sufficient. But if it's less than 6 hours, what's the rule? The Shach implies that 1 hour will always be enough. Remember, the Shach held that the Ramah Paskins, Mikra Din, Ashkenazim only have to wait 1 hour in the first place. And if you wait 1 hour, the Shach says you don't have to wash out your mouth. So if strictly speaking, going from Fleishix to Milchix 1 hour is sufficient without washing out your mouth, so certainly going from Milchix to Fleishix 1 hour will be sufficient without washing out your mouth. However, the Taz disagrees. The Taz says that 1 hour is insufficient. Well, how long is it? Presumably 6 hours is enough. 1 hour might not be enough. So I think the Taz would probably say that if you think that your mouth might still be dirty, or your hands might still be dirty, you have to wash out your mouth and wash out your hands. And if not, then you don't have to. There's no set amount of time how long this takes. So if we're talking about a cup of coffee, so there's not too much left pretty quickly. It's just a liquid. But depending on what it is, so that will determine how long you have to wait. Again, you could always wash out your mouth and wash your hands, but if you don't want to wash out and wash your hands, if it's an hour, I think one could be meka like the Shach. And if it's less than an hour, it's probably best to wash your mouth and wash your hands if it's less than an hour. Okay. Now, we'll talk about some of the possible exceptions, like you use a fork, or maybe coffee, this whole thing shouldn't apply because it's just a liquid. We'll talk about those questions in just a couple moments. Yeah. Yes, we don't make a gzera l'gzera. No, it's not a gzera l'gzera for the follow. First of all, as we noted, that it could be Rosh B'chalav is a case where we do make a gzera l'gzera, right? The Taz and the like. But even if you assume we don't, I would answer the following. This is part of the single gzera. The gzera is you're not allowed to eat meat and milk at the same time. And therefore, as long as there's a reasonable concern that there might be some residue of milk left in my mouth, so then this is b'chalav, the original gzera of not having meat and milk at the same time. Okay, so... now I want to come up, deal with the famous idea that probably many of you have heard of, which is this idea of hard cheese, or sometimes you do have to wait. Where does that come from? What's it from? So we have a story. The story is about the Maharam Meirotenberg. Maharam Meirotenberg was the Rebbe of the Rush. He's most famously known for being incarcerated and dying in jail because he didn't let anybody redeem him. So the Maharam Meirotenberg used to, in his youth, make fun of people that would wait from cheese to meat. Except, then one day, he noticed that between his teeth, there was a piece of cheese. Many hours later. So he decided, it says, Gazar al-Atmo, he made a gzera for himself to wait between cheese and meat. It says, Basar behema. He wouldn't wait between cheese and poultry, but he would wait between cheese and meat because once he found a piece of cheese stuck between his teeth. Now the Darkei Moshe, that's the Rama writes, that this is a Midas Chasidus. You don't have to follow the Maharam Mirandenburg. Because this is something that he did for himself because of something that happened to himself. He didn't think that you needed to do it. One's allowed to follow the halachas that appears in the Gemara. The Gemara says you don't need to do this. But this was a personal stringency that he accepted upon himself. And therefore, not something that's obligatory upon everybody else. And then the Rama writes, moreover, even if you're going to be machmir, this is only for cheese that has been aged for 6 months, or gvina metulas. What do you think gvina metulas means? What's a tolas? Tolas. Tuf vav lamed ayin saf. Samech. Worm! So, what is worm cheese? So, it's known as... So, yeah, somebody once... I once thought maybe that's like makes little holes in the Swiss cheese. That has nothing to do with it. That's like a worm. No, those are bubbles in the Swiss cheese. Nothing to do with worms. No, there is a cheese called, known as maggot cheese, or casu marzu, which is a traditional Sardinian sheep milk cheese, according to Wikipedia. And this is quite... what they do is basically it's full of larvae. It's full of these little worms. In fact, they actually, when you disturb them, they could jump for 6 inches. Some people leave the worms in the cheese when they eat them. Some people take out the worms. Now, in Hilchos Toloyim, the Rama talks about whether or not you have to take out the worms. Let's assume you do. Apparently, according to Wikipedia, and this is what the Rama writes as well, there is a particularly powerful aftertaste in maggot cheese. And therefore... what the Darkei Moshe is saying is when you have strong cheese or cheese that's likely to get stuck between your teeth. So aged cheese, the longer you age cheese, the stronger the taste becomes. Likewise, maggot cheese, even if it's not so aged, apparently very strong taste. So therefore, if you want to accept this chumra of the Maharam Mirandenburg, it would apply for aged cheeses, for maggot cheeses, but the implication is not other types of cheeses. And that's what the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch. We are no eg lahachmir, but only for aged cheese, which Ashach says means 6 months, or maggot cheese. Okay, so on the other hand, the Beis Yosef writes the following. Even though the Maharam was only machmir for meat after cheese and not chicken after cheese, if he had seen the Zohar, he would have been machmir even for chicken. I'm not sure why, because the Zohar doesn't mention chicken, but what's this Zohar? Beis Yosef quotes a Zohar. The Zohar writes that anyone who eats kol man de'achil hay michla, anyone who eats this food, meaning meat and milk, de ischaber kechada o b'shaita chada o b'sudas chada, you have meat and milk in the same meal or within the same hour, Arboin Yomin Ischazia Gadia Mikalsa Bekifloi. Whatever that means, it's not very good. So what the Zohar is saying is don't have meat and cheese in the same hour. So the Beis Yosef says that this is actually a reason to wait from eating dairy to eating meat. Not because of the Maram's concern, maybe some cheese might get stuck between your teeth, but for a second concern, the concern of the Zohar. So, to summarize what we've seen so far, according to the Gemara, what do you need to do? All you need to do is wash off your hands and make sure your mouth is clean by rinsing out your mouth and eating something solid. However, there are two bases for additional stringency. One is the chumrah of the Maharam, who was concerned, it would seem, about either cheese stuck between your teeth or maybe the pungent aftertaste of very strong, potent cheeses, or B, the Zohar, which says you shouldn't have meat and cheese in the same hour, which presumably means if you have cheese within the same hour, you shouldn't have meat. Now, there are a number of differences between these two concerns. For example, The Maharam's concern only seems to be relevant if there's a chance it will get stuck between your teeth or it will retain some type of residue taste in your mouth. The Zohar's concern should be relevant for all dairy products. On the other hand, the Zohar seems to imply that it's only within an hour. At most, you'll have to wait an hour. The Maharam Rotenberg's concern seems to be relevant for up to 6 hours. So, are we concerned with either of these two sources? And if we are we concerned with one of them or both of them? That's the question we need to find out. So we'll start with the Taz. The Taz is an interesting thing. The Taz says that if you're worried about the Maharam, I'll say one thing. There are some that just discounted the Maharam, the Marshal among them. He said the Marshal said the Maharam's Chumrah is a very nice Chumrah, but it's against the Gemara. The Gemara says you don't need to do this. We don't have to be more frum than a Gemara. We don't have to make up new Xeros. The Gemara says it's okay. Nothing to worry about. Let's assume that, but the Ramah, as we saw, said that the Minhag is to be Machmir. The Taz understands that it's a little strange because it seems from the Maharam that his concern is cheese between the teeth. The Taz assumes that cheese between your teeth is no problem. Even if there was cheese between your teeth and you knew it, you could have fleishiks. The reason is, according to the Taz, the Gemara was only concerned about meat between your teeth, not cheese between your teeth, even if you knew it was there. This is a big machlokas. The Rashba says otherwise. This or Vehetar says like the Taz. It all depends. The Gemara has a chiddush. You do have to worry about meat between your teeth, and it quotes a pasuk, v'abasar odenu bein shinehem. It's still considered basar, even though it's between your teeth. So the Taz understands it's a special chiddush for basar. It doesn't apply to anything else. The Rashba says, no, we learn from basar to anything that food stuck between your teeth retains its original halacha. So that's a machlokas. We would probably be machmir if you know there is cheese stuck between your teeth. If you don't know that there's cheese stuck between your teeth, so then we said that you only have to be machmir, even if you follow the stringency of the Maharam, if it's aged cheese. I'm assuming none of us eat maggot cheese. So the only concern is aged cheese. So we need to figure out what exactly is aged hard cheese. So there are some poskim that say that anything that is hard cheese, meaning to say not soft like cottage cheese, but hard cheese, requires waiting. For example, this is the opinion of Rav Yashiv. He understands that Gvinat Zehuba in Israel is hard cheese for these purposes, even if it's not aged. You don't need aging per se. Anything that's hard cheese is aser and requires waiting. So according to Rav Yashiv, anytime, there's also the view of the Shevet Halevi, Rav Osner, anytime you have mozzarella cheese, American cheese, cheddar cheese, Swiss cheese, you'd have to wait 6 hours. That's a very big chumrah. The poskim in America don't seem to be so concerned about this. Among them, Rav Aaron Cutler and others, and they say, no, it's only aged hard cheese. We'll define aged, but if it's not known to be aged cheese, then it's okay. And I think that there's a lot of room for leniency about this issue because, after all, this din is not a din d'oraisa, it's not a din d'rabbanan, it's not a din in the Gemara, it's a minug, and therefore we have the right to be lenient about this. And therefore, only cheeses that we know to be aged are a problem. So regular cheese is no problem. You wouldn't have to wait 6 hours after having Munster cheese or mozzarella cheese. So, but we have to figure out which cheeses are aged. So, a quick look on the internet, and then I found Rabbi Gordimer, who lives here in Washington Heights, has an article on it. He works for the OU. How long typical cheeses are aged in America. So, cheddar cheese, mild cheddar is generally aged for 2 to 3 months. Extra sharp cheddar might be aged longer, but generally cheddar is not aged for 6 months. Mozzarella, typically 30 days. Munster cheese, typically 5 to 7 weeks. Parmesan cheese is the only common cheese that we eat that might be a problem. That is frequently aged 10 to 24 months. And we'll talk about whether melted Parmesan is different in just a moment. Swiss cheese, in America, usually only 3 to 4 months. Now, there are some poskim that are concerned, and especially some are concerned that, well, let's say we said Swiss cheese is 3 to 4 months, but then the shelf life might make it age much longer. How long is it on the shelf in the supermarket and then in your refrigerator and the like? There's a discussion whether cheese continues to mature even after it's packaged. Maybe it only matures, it only becomes more potent or strong when it's before it's packaged in the aging process. So apparently it gets a little stronger, but not much stronger. So there are different poskim. Some poskim say anytime it's a strong cheese, you should be machmir, even if you don't know that it was aged 3 months. So you don't have to be makel for, you don't have to be machmir for weak tasting cheeses, but strong cheeses, you have to be machmir. Some are makel, some are more machmir. I think that it's reasonable to paskin that any time, unless you know that this is aged cheese, aged for 6 months or longer, one could be makel. And typically, most of the cheeses we buy, with the exception of Parmesan, are not aged long enough. Again, some people want to be machmir for Romano cheese. I don't even know what that is, but apparently it's more strong. And that cannot be used unless it's aged 5 to 7 months. So therefore, Romano cheese. Anybody ever tasted that? No? Okay. Well, if you do, so you might have to wait 6 hours. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so as we said, I think the pashtus is, again, they're machmirin, but the pashtus is you could probably be makel on all the cheeses we typically eat except for Parmesan. What if it is Parmesan? So let's... There's no pizza bagels you're going to buy in the supermarket that have Parmesan on it. Halavai. They use the cheapest cheese they could find. But let's say you did. Let's say you even put Parmesan cheese on your own pizza bagel at home. So what's the halacha? I don't know, maybe like, you know, pomegranate store. They have their pizza bagels have Parmesan cheese on it. All right. So there's a machlokas, what to do if the cheese is melted. Why would that make a difference? Well, if your concern is that because it's hard, it's going to get stuck between your teeth. So if the cheese is melted, that's probably not a concern. Remember, the Maharam's concern was getting stuck between your teeth. Also, it happens to be that the strength of the cheese, the very strong, potent flavor, does not come across to the same degree if it's melted. So the Yad Yehuda was mako for melted cheese. Even here, some say maybe it's only when it's melted and integrated into the food, like lasagna. But if it's melted but just sprinkled on top, that's insufficient. Others deny this whole idea of the Yad Yehuda. They say melted cheese doesn't make any difference. Again, I think that since this whole thing is a big chumra in the first place, one could be makel and follow the view of the Yad Yehuda. Though, as I said, there are machmirim on melted cheese as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the concern, just like kinuach v'hadacha is insufficient for meat, for example, right? In other words, we're concerned that kinuach v'hadacha works for low-grade residue or stuff stuck between your teeth, but it doesn't work for things that are more sticky. So meat is more either more sticky or long-lasting, and therefore kinuach v'hadacha doesn't work for meat. And hard cheeses have some of the properties that are similar to that of meat, and that's the basis of that concern. Whether it's the flavor or the fatty residue or the like, whatever the concerns are that you think exist for meat, and we're choshish for both basar bein hashinayim or the residue that remains, so apparently those posts can assume that the same concern exists with cheese. I would think that there's absolutely no reason to be more machmir for cheese than for meat. So if you wait 3 hours for one, then 3 hours would surely suffice for the other. That's because, like I just said, I think the gader is that we're concerned that these types of cheeses have the same properties or similar properties of meat. So whatever you require for meat, you would require for cheese as well. Now put Parmesan on a salad or the like. Yeah. Again, according to the Yad Yehuda, you could be mako for melted Parmesan. Yeah. I'm sorry? The average slice of pizza, first of all, just usually has mozzarella or maybe cheddar or some other stuff, and it's melted. So between those two, studim lahakel, I think there's room for for leniency. Yeah. The Rama writes that the minhag is to be machmir. If it's hot noodles, I think you could be mako. You don't see it, Ben. I think it's, you could assume it's melted. I think it's like a cheese cracker, right?
It's like
puffs. It's like cheese puffs. Yeah. It's okay. I think so. Yeah. Okay. I assume it's butter. Okay. Now, what about other things? Other dairy products. So we saw before that according to the Zohar, it sounds like you should have to wait at least an hour. So here too, there are different opinions. The Badi HaShulchan cites that many have the custom even for soft cheese, even for other dairy products like soft cheese, to wait an hour and also to bench or to make a bracha achrona. Why? Because of the Zohar, that you have to wait an hour and you can't eat it during the same meal. So therefore, if you're machmir for the Zohar, you have to do two things. Number one is bracha achrona to show that it's a different meal, and number two is to wait an hour. That is the view of some poskim. Others say a half hour suffices. I assume the theory is that the Zohar doesn't say you have to wait a full hour. It means within the same hour. If you've waited a half hour, then that's a fulfillment of what the Zohar says. The Zohar is basically saying that you should have some type of significant break in between dairy and meat, and for that a half hour suffices, according to those who have the custom of waiting only a half hour. Now, the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah write that you do not have to make a bracha achrona. This comes up a lot, especially on Shavuos. Many people have the custom. I know my grandparents' custom was on Shavuos. They would make kiddush, they would have coffee and cheesecake, and then they would wash and have the rest of the Suda. Now there's some other interesting halachos and questions that are involved there. We won't get into that now. But do you need to make a bracha achrona? So according to the Mishnah Berurah and the Magen Avraham, you do not have to. Now it seems to me that indicates that the Mishnah Berurah and the Magen Avraham think we don't paskin like the Zohar. Because if you paskined like the Zohar, then you'd have to make a bracha achrona. Because remember, the Zohar says you can't do it at the same meal. And therefore, if you paskin like the Zohar, then you would have to make a bracha achrona, as we saw many achronim say, quoted in the Badi HaShulchan. And therefore, it sounds like the Mishnah Berurah and the Magen Avraham think we don't paskin like the Zohar, in which case you shouldn't even have to wait a half hour either, or an hour. And that is why I think many are makel halacha l'maisa not to be choshish for the Zohar. And therefore, the only thing you have to do, strictly speaking, as we said, wash out your mouth well, right, with liquid, solid, wash your hands, and that suffices. And especially when it comes to Shavuos, there might even be a reason not to make a bracha achrona, because that could get you into Kiddush Makom Suda issues, but that's not relevant for now. Okay. Do you have to wait after drinking milk or coffee? That's what we asked, right? Maybe, or do you have to do anything? Maybe you shouldn't have to. So the Rashash writes that you don't need to do anything because chalav does not stick to your mouth and it doesn't stick to your teeth. And he's medayik from the Gemara. The Gemara only talked about a story of cheese with meat or cheese with chicken. Davka said cheese and not chalav, because for chalav there's no need. However, the Isser V'Heter says that you need kinuach v'adacha, you need to wash out your mouth and for a drink as well. And therefore, I think the minug is that we are machmir to, at the very least, rinse out your mouth if you wanted to have meat right after you had a glass of milk or a cup of coffee with milk. What about your question about silverware? So the Pri Chadosh writes that if you eat with silverware and you don't touch the food, you do not need Netilas Yadayim. The Pri Megadim, quoted in Pesachei Tshuva, says it's still best to wash your hands. Why? You never know. You might have touched the food without paying attention. Sometimes you're eating with a fork and knife, but without thinking about it, you might touch it. Now, even though it sounds like from the Gemara that if you inspect your hands and you see they're clean, and certainly if you use silverware and you inspect your hands, that should be sufficient. Still, the Pri Megadim sounds like it's better to be machmir. So I think that the answer is if you use silverware and you check your hands, strictly speaking, you don't have to wash your hands, but it could be that it's best to wash your hands anyway, but probably you don't need to do that, strictly speaking. Yeah? It's an excellent question. Can you brush your teeth? Does brushing your teeth replace eating a solid food? The answer is no. And the reason is because even if brush your teeth works just as well for your teeth, but what about your palate? What about the top of your mouth? You could brush your tongue. Let's say you're going to brush the top of your palate, right? The idea of food is that it could effectively clean more spots. And I would even add, there's some poskim that say you need to swallow the food to get to clean out the back of your mouth. The Pesachei Tshuva writes, even if you don't paskin like those opinions, you should still swallow it because of hefsed ochlin. You shouldn't waste food, spit it out for no reason. But the answer, I think, is that brushing your teeth would be insufficient because that might work for your teeth, but not the rest of your mouth. Chewing on gum, I think that would probably, it might be good enough, but it might not be. In other words, it could be that food does a better job at cleaning out your mouth, and that's what the Gemara says. So gum isn't food, it's chewing on plastic or rubber, whatever it is. So I would think that you should, I could hear what you're saying, but I would think the Gemara says you should use food to clean out your mouth, so you should use food to clean out your mouth. Yeah? You're going to be poking all the food, and therefore any food that's left there is unfit for achila, and therefore, since it's unfit for achila, even if it got mixed in with the other food, it would be okay. Strictly speaking, that might be okay, but we still say ein mevatlin l'chatchila, so I think we would be machmir. But yeah, it's not a, you can make...
No, because
mouthwash is much more potent and it gets everywhere.
Like now, I disagree.
If you really held that were true, then you shouldn't have to wait 6 hours either. You could just use mouthwash, right? Nobody would say that. Well, the inside of your teeth. Anyway, Lemaise, I think we're machmir. I think we would be machmir about that. Okay. Now we get in. Yes. Sorry, louder. Yes. If there's less than shishim, it's okay. B'diavet. But l'chatchila, we don't try to do that. We try to avoid mixing even tiny amounts of milk with our meat and the reverse. Okay. So now, what about a dish that has no meat in it, but was cooked with meat? Let's say chalent. But you don't eat the meat, you just eat the barley and the potatoes. Or chicken soup. You don't eat any chicken. It's chicken-flavored water. So you can make the case that, let's say, with chicken soup, none of the reasons apply. And therefore, you should not have to wait 6 hours after chicken soup or wait 6 hours after eating chalent if you don't actually eat the meat, and so on and so forth. What's the halacha? So the truth of the matter is that the Gemara discusses this, and according to probably most Rishonim, if you go from Tavshil Shel Basar to Tavshil Shel Gvina, you don't need to do anything. And if you go from Tavshil Shel Basar to Gvina, all you would need to do is Netila. And you wouldn't have to wait 6 hours. That is the view of most Rishonim. Nevertheless, for some reason, we are machmir about this as well. And well, it's a little late, so we won't get into the details, but Lamaisa, even though the simple reading of the Gemara implies that you would not have to wait 6 hours for a Tavshil Shel Basar, we are machmir for a Tavshil Shel Basar to wait 6 hours. Now, I don't know if Sfardim would be machmir for this. The Mechaber does not quote this Chumrah. So according to the Mechaber, if you ate a Tavshil Shel Basar, again, a Tavshil Shel Basar means a dish that contained meat in the dish, so you have meat flavor in the food you're eating, but you didn't actually eat any meat, like chicken soup, or again, chalent without eating meat. So according to the Mechaber, if you had a Tavshil Shel Basar, you could immediately eat a Tavshil Shel Gvina, and if you wanted to have Gvina, so then you would need to wash your hands, but not more. You wouldn't have to wait. However, as I said, the Ramah is Machmir, that he writes, Achshev Nahagu Shelo Lechol Gvina Acha Tavshil Shel Basar Kimo Achar Basar Atzmo. So we are Noheg, our minhag is, that just like we wait 6 hours for meat, so too we wait six, assuming you wait 6 hours for meat, whatever you follow for meat, assuming it's 6 hours, so just like we wait 6 hours for meat, so too we would wait 6 hours from a meat dish. At least if you wanted to actually have meat. If you wanted to have, if you had a Tavshil Shel Basar, and you wanted to have a Tavshil Shel Gvina, so then presumably you wouldn't have to wait. That's what Rabbi Kiva Eger points out. Though the Marshal sounds like we're even machmir about that as well. It's not so common, because you don't really have a Tavshil Shel Gvina. Because most of the time when you have Gvina in a food, the whole thing is, the Gvina is actually mixed in. Right? The Tavshil Shel Basar is something that was cooked with meat, but you're not actually eating meat. Usually if you have milk or cheese, it's going to be mixed throughout. I guess the question would be, strictly speaking, according to Rabbi Kiva Eger, if you had a Tavshil Shel Basar, so you had your chicken soup with just broth, and then you wanted to eat pizza and take off the cheese, you could do that without waiting 6 hours. And that about that, the Marshal is machmir as well. But this isn't so practical, Lamaisa. So Lamaisa, I think for purposes of simplicity, most of the time we're going to paskin that if you had a dish that was cooked with meat, even if you didn't actually eat any meat, you should wait 6 hours. Now, what about if you just had a fleishig pot? Let's say I cook par of food in a fleishig pot. And let's even assume the pot was ben yomo, right? I use this pot to cook meat. 5 minutes later, I use the same pot to cook potatoes. Do I have to wait 6 hours from eating the potatoes? Absolutely not. The potatoes don't make me fleishig in any way. We'll see that l'chatchila, you shouldn't eat those potatoes with cheese. But you definitely do not have to wait after eating food that was cooked in a meat pot. Okay. Ah, so you are already thinking ahead to the Shach. So the Shach asks, what's the Chiddush? The truth of the matter is you could probably eat milk with, strictly speaking, at least b'di'aved, with potatoes cooked in a fleishig pot. Obviously, you don't have to wait. There's no chiddush. Why did the Shulchan Aruch have to tell me I don't have to wait? That's obvious. So he says exactly what you said. Even if you didn't wash out the pot well, let's say you cooked meat in your pot and you didn't wash the pot well and then you cooked potatoes in the pot, so you know for sure that there's going to be some residue of meat mixed in with your potatoes. Still, you don't have to wait 6 hours. So that's the halacha. If we're dealing with small amounts of meat that gets mixed in, even if theoretically you could taste it, it's still going to be okay. And even if there isn't shishim, it would be okay. Because if you couldn't taste it, or if there's shishim, you wouldn't have to wait 6 hours anyway. You could eat it, right? So l'chora, even if you use a pot and you didn't clean out your pot, and then you cook for meat, you didn't clean it out, you cook noodles or potatoes or whatever it is, and you ate those potatoes, you still wouldn't have to wait 6 hours. You can't eat dairy at the same time with it. Immediately afterwards. Yeah, I would think. Immediately afterwards. Now, that's the Shach's answer to the question. Again, what was the question? Why do you need to tell me you don't have to wait 6 hours after you cook the meat, after you cook the potatoes in a fleshik pot? That's obvious. Shach says the chiddush is even if the pot was dirty. Rabbi Kiv Eger is a different chiddush. Rabbi Kiv Eger says the chiddush is even though you cooked davar charif, you cooked onions in the pot. Now, we haven't talked about what davar charif is. We'll have plenty of time to discuss these matters. But for simplicity's sake, we're going to find out that when you deal with davar charif absorbs the flavor or magnifies the flavor of the pot that it's cooked in. And that's why, for example, even though, for example, let's take it. If I have a eino ben yomo fleishig pot and I cook potatoes in it, and then I want to eat those potatoes with cheese, mutter. That's what's called not bar not. We'll discuss that later. But if they were onions, then I couldn't eat those onions with cheese. Okay? So now he says, maybe you would think that if you cooked onions in a fleishig pot, you'd have to wait 6 hours because, as we said, onions, davar charif, magnify the flavor, rejuvenate the flavor, whatever they do, and therefore you don't have to wait 6 hours. Kamash malan? No, you don't have to wait. So you don't have to wait 6 hours if you cooked potatoes in a fleishig pot. And even if you cooked onions in a fleishig pot, you don't have to wait 6 hours. And we paskin also, like the kula of Rabbi Kiv Eger and the Shach, so even if you cooked potatoes in a dirty pot, you don't have to wait 6 hours. And even if you cooked onions in a dirty pot, you don't have to wait 6 hours. You don't have to wait 6 hours for fleishig kalim, no matter what you cooked in it, and even if it's somewhat dirty. That's the way we paskin. There are some who disagree with Rabbi Kiv Eger. There are some that disagree with the Shach, but I think one is allowed to be mako. Okay, now things get very confusing. So, hopefully you'll follow. Probably, I don't know, I didn't follow this until like I learned it the fourth time. So, we'll get back to it maybe when we do davar charif. So we just said that if you cooked onions in a fleishik pot, you don't have to wait 6 hours. So what about if you're fleishiks? Can you cook onions that were cooked in a milchig pot? I would say yes, what's the difference, right? The Prima Gadim says you can't. If you're fleishiks, you can't cook davar charif, you can't eat onions cooked in a milchig pot. So I would have thought that Rabbi Kiva Eger and Prima Gadim disagree. Then you have to figure out, who do we paskin like, Rabbi Kiva Eger or Prima Gadim? However, there are some achronim who want to say it's not a machlokas. So this is the confusing part. They say that we could follow Rabbi Kiv Eger. Onions cooked in a fleishik pot don't make you fleishiks because there was no actual meat. But if I'm truly fleishiks because I ate meat, then since onions cooked in a milchik pot have the status of milchiks, I can't eat them. In other words, it doesn't go both ways. So therefore, they have the status of milchiks and they have the status of fleishiks. They just don't make you fleishiks. If I'm fully fleishiks, that's the answer. The answer is, just like, for example, we found for Tavshil Shel Chalav or Basar Meikar Adin. Just because, and the answer, one way to look at it is the following, right? It doesn't have the status of fleishiks because the reasons for the waiting of 6 hours don't apply here. Either between your teeth, right? So it doesn't have the status, but if you are fleishiks, you can't have milchiks of any sort, even if the reasons don't apply there. Right? So that's why you could theoretically argue that they're compatible. Do we paskin like this Prima Gadim? Many of the like Kashrus Svarim say we are choshish for the Prima Gadim. So if you're fleishiks, you can't have milchiks, onions cooked in a milchik pot. However, Rav Elyashiv is mekel. He thinks we don't have to be machmir for Rabbi Kiv Eger. Sorry, the Prima Gadim. I asked Rabbi Willig today. Rabbi Willig has also thought you could be mekel. We could say that the Rabbi Kiv Eger and the Prima Gadim argue and we follow the Rabbi Kiv Eger against the Prima Gadim. So this leads to a very interesting question. Funnily enough, is that a word? Probably not. It is a word? Awesome. All right. So I was asked this question today. Here is the question. Somebody went ahead and they had yogurt for breakfast and then they used their spoon from yogurt without washing it to mix their coffee. And then they drank half their coffee. Then they had lunch. And now they wanted to drink the other half of the coffee. But the problem was the black coffee. But they used the spoon that they used for the yogurt. So first they thought, the shach should be okay. But But then I thought, one second, if we learn like Pri Megadim, you'd have to be Machmir, right? So, assuming there isn't Shishim. But then I thought, but if you hold like Rav Eliashiv, you could be Makel. So I asked Rabbi Willig. Willig said, yeah, he agrees. He thinks that we could be Makel. We don't have to be Hosh with the Pri Megadim and Lechora then. You could drink your coffee mixed with a spoon that was used for yogurt without being washed, even though you just had fleishiks. Okay, that's the cool of the day. Now I'm going to tell you, yeah. No, the idea would, if you're assuming you argue that we follow Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Pri Megadim, right? You're machmir for both. Or you make it like Rabbi Akiva Eger, but you're machmir like Pri Megadim. So this far would be as follows. It absorbs the taste of the cheese. And since we wouldn't have a tavshil shel chalav after eating basar within 6 hours, so therefore you'd have to be machmir. Masha'en kain, will it make you fleishiks? No, because just because something absorbed the taste doesn't make you fleishiks. And even though we're machmir for tavshil shel basar to wait 6 hours, that's because there's mamasha shel basar mixed in. But if it's just tam basar without mamasha, it's like something that comes from a pot, it would be okay. That would be the logic, I think. Okay, so here's a very interesting question that comes up. So this question is known as the Golan French fries shaila. What's the Golan French fry shaila? It comes up all the time, though. You might not want to hear this question because it might make you decide that you never want to have French fries anymore. But French fries are deep fried, at least when made in restaurants. And restaurants don't want to refill or change their oil every time they use it. In fact, they tend to use the oil for quite a while until it expires. I don't know exactly how and when they know it expires. But for a while, they'll use it. So here's the shaila. Let's say this restaurant, and this is true for most fleishig restaurants that have deep fryers, at least it's a reasonable concern. Though somebody told me that in Golan, they have a separate one that they use for French fries. But this is frequently a shaila for many restaurants. So I go ahead and I go to, I don't know, Dougie's or Golan, and I just have French fries. Am I fleishigs? So I would think, no, I shouldn't be fleishigs. The French fries are parev. But the problem is that the same oil they used to cook the French fries just 5 minutes earlier, they were using to cook poppers or meat or whatever fleishig, truly fleishig dishes that they had. So the oil was full of fleish. So l'chora, you would have to wait 6 hours because we said we're machmir for tavshil shel basar. Except we'll say, maybe this is like the shach. What's the reason why the shach said you didn't have to wait 6 hours? So one way to understand the reason why the shach said you don't have to wait 6 hours is because you didn't really want this meat to be here in the first place. You wanted to cook potatoes. You would rather have your pot been clean. You didn't just were too lazy. You didn't bother cleaning it. So you don't have to wait 6 hours if there's some meat that's mixed in that you don't really want to be there. Well, I don't want meat in my French fries. So therefore, if there's meat in my French fries, it should be okay. I don't have to wait 6 hours. That's one sad l'hakal. The other tzad l'hakel is as follows. We'll see more about this later. But let's say I taste my French fries and there's no taste of meat. So why can't I say, I'm believed. There's no meat tam in here. If there was any meat, it's bato. And therefore, it's okay. Those were the tzadim l'hakel. And there are poskim that are mekel. What are the tzadim l'hachmir? A couple of tzadim l'hachmir. Number one is that the oil is really a tavshil shel basar, right? The French fries are full of oil. It's not just like the case of the shach, where there's some residue left on. There's really, right, there's probably more oil in French fry. Oil are full of basar. Also, could be that ta'ima doesn't work, because ta'ima only works when we expect to be able to taste the flavoring. Now, the oil from the meat, or the fat from the meat, might have the same flavor as the fat from the vegetable oil they're using for deep frying, and therefore you wouldn't even expect to taste it. Moreover, it's not just something that you would rather wasn't here, though you don't care that it is here. So different poskim say different things. I saw an interesting article about this in the Voice of Lakewood, which is a magazine in Lakewood, and they quoted that Rabbi Forsheimer, who's one of the poskim in Lakewood, was machmir on this shaila, that you should wait. Also Rabbi Felder, you should wait, but there are other poskim that are makel. Okay. And Simon Petas, yes. Louder. We'll get to it. You definitely don't have to wait in that case. Definitely don't have to wait 6 hours. The question is, can you eat that with milchix? We'll get there in just 2 minutes. The old side dish shaila. Okay. So before we get to the side dish shaila, one shaila first. Sif Dalad in Siman Pei Tes says the following halacha. Bread that's left over from a fleishig meal, you shouldn't eat it with a milchig meal. I don't think it would make you fleishigs, but if you have bread on the Shabbos table, for example, you shouldn't eat it with a milchig meal. What's the reason for this? So one of the main reasons, based off of the Yerushalmi, is that people's hands might be dirty. Like we said before, if you want to go from milchix to fleishig, you have to wash your hands. They touch the bread, and therefore they might have not, you know, I know you're only supposed to touch the food you're planning to take. Doesn't always work that way. You might touch the piece of bread that's next to it, for example. And therefore, we assume that, or concerned that the bread left over on the table might have some residue of meat on it, and therefore you shouldn't eat it together with milchix. So this is very common, right? You have you want to have challah, melava malka, with your cream cheese, so you should not put cream cheese on that challah if it was sliced at the table. What about if you cut half your challah and you put it out, and the other half of challah you left on the table, but uncut? And when you initially cut the challah, obviously your hands were clean, right? You just made kiddush, your hands aren't dirty yet. So what should the halacha be in that case? So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this. He thinks it's okay. He thinks it's only the sliced bread that shouldn't be eaten at a milchig meal, but the unsliced bread, unless you have reason to be suspicious, is presumed to be okay. And therefore, the unsliced challah you may have at your melava malka with cream cheese. What about your question? Your question was, what about salad, right? So the Aruch HaShulchan says, mitzvah min ha-muvchar to be machmir. That mitzvah min ha-muvchar, ideally, all food eaten at a fleishig meal should not be eaten together with milchix. Again, you definitely will not become fleishigs by eating it. If I have leftover salad from my Shabbos meal, and I have it, that's not going to make me fleishigs, but I shouldn't eat that together with milk, ideally. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. There are many people that are not machmir about this. I remember growing up, my mother would always say, make sure not to take the salad spoons, you know, that you're using to stir, dish out the salad, to touch the food on your plate, because I want the salad to remain parev. I don't think that's crazy. If you pay attention to try to keep it parev, and the Aruch HaShulchan, as we said, is only a mitzvah min ha-muvchar, and if accidentally something did get into it, it's probably going to be a mashehu and bato, and you're not going to taste it. So, you know, I definitely, if your minhag at home is to eat the parev salads that were used at a fleishig meal, to eat them at a milchig meal, again, assuming especially there are adults at the table and people are, you know, more or less trying to keep the parev food parev, I don't think that is inappropriate, but there is this mitzvah min ha-muvchar. If you, some poskim advise trying to avoid the shayit, trying to avoid it. But if you do, it's a chumra. I think a mikra adin, it's okay. Yes. So two questions. Definitely, then you shouldn't eat the cauliflower in a milchig meal. There's no doubt. If you use the same spoon to serve the chicken for the cauliflower, so obviously you shouldn't. I don't think it would make you fleishigs. That's like the shach's case. Assuming that the spoon, if the spoon was full of gravy and the like, and there's like, you know, there's a chance that there's going to be a substantial amount, so then maybe it would make you fleishigs. But assuming it was basically a clean spoon that was first used for the chicken and then somebody used it for the cauliflower, so I think you could compare that to the case of the shach, and you wouldn't have to wait 6 hours from eating the cauliflower. Okay. Pesach writes the follows. Let's look at his lashon. Af im nisbashal b'kaderish lo hudcha yafa. Diktsas mamasha shel iser nishar sham. So he says shelo hudcha yafa. So it was washed but not well. So I think, though it doesn't need to be washed, I think the ikar question is it ktsas mamasha shel iser shenishar sham or harbi mamasha shel iser shenishar sham? If it's ktsas mamasha shel iser sham, so then you wouldn't have to wait. If it's harbe, you would. So that's why I said with the spoon. If the spoon was basically clean, even though it wasn't washed, it was clean. Let's say it was, depending on what type of chicken it was. So then you could be mako. But if it was harbe mamasho shel vasar shenishar sham, so then it would make you fleishiks. Okay. Two last very quick halachos relating to the siman. I'm sorry, I know it's late, but I just want to finish the siman and we're almost done. One relates to a tablecloth. So the Beis Yosef quotes from a Tshuvas HaMiyuchasos LeRamban that you shouldn't have milchiks on the same tablecloth that you had fleishiks. Why? Presumably because we're concerned that not all your food stays on your plate and some crumbs of milchiks and fleishiks get on each other. So what about if you use plates? It sounds like from that tshuva that they used to eat off their tables. So, okay, if you eat off your table and you don't eat off your plate, then I understand why you'd have to switch tablecloths. But what about if you only eat off of plates? What's the halacha there? So one could make the argument that in that case it's mutter. However, it sounds like from a tshuva of the Radvaz, between the Ramban and the Radvaz, they must have invented plates, that you should be machmir. He says you don't have to get a new tablecloth. You could flip it upside down, but you should still flip it upside down. What's the reason to be machmir in this case? The answer, I suppose, is that even though you do eat off of plates, sometimes things might fall on the tablecloth and you might still eat them anyway. So the minhag is to still try to be machmir and either have separate tablecloths or flip over the tablecloth. If you launder the tablecloth, it's okay. Whatever crumbs and things are there will come out in a laundry. If it's a plastic tablecloth, then if you wipe it down well, that's also good enough. You don't have to launder it. Or sometimes if you just eat off of tables, like this is common in yeshiva dining rooms, they don't use tablecloths, they just use the table. So one yeshiva I went to, they flipped the tables upside down. But strictly speaking, if it's a plastic tablecloth and you clean it off well, then that's probably also okay. You don't have to, and that's what the Magen Avraham says, actually. The Shulchan Aruch also concludes that you should have separate knives for milchiks and fleishiks. That's like obvious to us. We have separate silverware and the like, but there's a special concern with knives because there's more of a concern with residue on knives. Now, what happens if you accidentally used your fleishik knife on some cheese or the like? So here's the halacha of me'itza. I remember I saw this, my grandmother do this, and I was a little boy, and I was really excited because I saw my grandmother stabbing the knife into the ground. It's like, what could be more fun? Even better, then she asked me if I wanted to do it. She said, stab it 10 times. So there could be nothing more fun for a little boy than stabbing a knife into the ground, especially when your mother doesn't let you use knives. My grandmother was from Europe. I think they had a different sense of what was considered dangerous. That's because we assume, the Shulchan Aruch assumes, that cleaning the knife simply, if you assuming it's cold, you accidentally used your fleishik knife on a piece of cheese, so cleaning it the normal way might not get everything off. We probably assume that nowadays, if you clean it really well with a sponge or the like, that it gets everything off anyway, you don't have to worry about that. So that halacha isn't so relevant to us, and since we have separate milchiks and fleishiks things, we don't have to do ne'itza l'chatchila. Yes? Even a serrated knife, we will assume, you know, does your serrated knife feel it? Is there any residue left after you've washed it and cleaned it? So if there is, then you should do ne'itza. But if not, if you cleaned it well, some say you could use steel wool. Steel wool is like ne'itza. I don't even think you need to do that. Nowadays, if it feels clean and it looks clean and it's clean to the touch, Rabbi Willig said that as well, then you could assume it's clean. All right. We were supposed to do Parsha, 1 minute Vart. When you look and learn Sefer Bereishis, some of the most profound lessons, I think, are learned from small little dikdukim, small little subtle points in the psukim. So here's one point that the Ramban makes, which I thought was such a tremendous lesson about doing chesed. The Avraham Avinu, when he's buying Maris HaMachpelah, says, "Beyitain li, you'll give it to me." Giving implies matana, but we see that Avraham was willing to pay full price for it. So why does he say "Beyitain li"? So the Ramban says that this means she'achshiv kematana, even though he paid kesef male, even though he paid full price. What's the idea? The idea is that he wanted to allow Ephron to feel as though he's doing a nice thing to Avram. So even though in reality, Avram was the one doing him the favor, he's paying him a ton of money for this little plot of land, but Avram allowed him to feel like he was doing him a favor. Great Balei Chasadim, and I've seen this in many people, so somehow or another, they're able to do you a favor, but make you think that you're doing them a favor. Sometimes I don't even realize how they're doing it. They like say thank you. Oh, of course. And then I think about it after. They were helping me. I wasn't helping them. That's exactly what Avram does. Avram Avinu wants to help Ephron feel really good about what he did. So he said, yeah, give it to me as a gift, even though I'm going to pay you full price. You know, it's the opposite of, I think, what a lot of us, including myself, do often, which is that when we do somebody a favor, we want them to realize, I'm doing you a really big favor. What Avram did is even when he did people a favor, so he made it feel, he didn't want them to feel like he was doing them a favor, because that takes away, that makes you feel bad. You see that also at the beginning of last week's Parsha, the guests come, and Avram says, oh, let me give you a kapas lechem, I'll give you a little drink, a little bit of bread, and of course he prepares a lavish meal. But again, he doesn't want them to feel like they're imposing. You see the opposite of Ephron. Ephron at the beginning of this Parsha does the opposite. Ah, I'll give it to you as a gift. In the end of the day, he takes it full price. You see, again, the subtle ways in which Avram is a Baal Chesed. He's not just a Baal Chesed in that he's generous to his guests. He's generous to his guests, but he also does it in a way that makes them not feel bad about accepting his generosity. Likewise with Ephron. He's not just very generous in his purchase, I'll pay full price, but he also does it in a way that makes Ephron feel good about what he's doing. And that is the mark of a true Baal Chesed. He does chesed to other people, she does chesed to other people, but he or she does it in a way that doesn't make the recipient feel bad about receiving the chesed. On the contrary, allows them to feel good even as they're accepting the chesed. Have a good day. Good night.